Welcome to Take on the Lake. I've got a story for you.
Hey everybody, welcome to Take on the Lake with Lake Expo. I'm Nathan Bechtold, and we've got a cool guest today, Edwin McCain. You've heard of Edwin McCain, singer-songwriter out of Greenville, South Carolina. Really well known for a couple of huge hits, and he's going to be performing, well, we'll see, those and some others maybe at Ozarks Amphitheater this summer here at the Lake of the Ozarks. So I heard from his producer or publicist and thought, you know what? Let's have him on the show, man. I'd love to talk to Edwin McCain about music and all the things. And so anyways, Edwin, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Absolutely. And you were joining us from Greenville, South Carolina.
And you said it correctly.
Yep. My wife, like I said, is a South Carolina girl. So I've learned a few things over the years. The big debate whenever we have family get-togethers with her family, which the food is always superb. Two big debates are, is it pronounced pecan or pecan? Which one do you go with?
We all say pecan.
Yeah. Okay. See? And then.
It's all acceptable.
Yeah. I hear debates both ways. Yeah, they're delicious. That's all that matters, right? Yeah. It's pecan pie or pecan pie. And then we do low country boils, but my wife's mom calls it Frogmore stew. You ever heard of
Frogmore stew? Yeah, we call it that too.
Yeah. So, dude, I love the Carolina culture, man. That's great. So that's your backdrop, really, is the Carolinas. There's a lot of good music that's come out of the Carolinas.
Yeah, and especially Greenville. And it's interesting because Greenville as a city doesn't really have a music scene. It's much better now, but back in the day, it wasn't like there were lots of little clubs and lots of little bands, but there were a lot of musicians that have come out of here because Peba Bryson, Jackal, Marcus King Marshall Tucker. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, but there's a lot of musicians coming out of here. So I don't know what the deal is.
I don't know. It's good culture down there. One of my favorite bands actually is Need to Breathe. I don't remember if they're
Need to Breathe. They're Greenville. Yeah. Need to Breathe. Yep. Sorry, I omitted them. I apologize. they're good.
Saw them in concert in 2021. I think it was. It was after. Everybody had to take a hiatus from concerting for a while due to the thing that we do not name. And it was.
Wait. I want to know why. Why don't the COVID?
Yeah, right.
The pandemic? Why? Yeah. Is that like a taboo subject?
Something. Oh, no. I just, like to move on past that topic.
Okay.
But I saw them in St. Louis. I think it was like their first concert or one of their first after not getting to tour for a while. And it was, they had a lot of pent up concert energy. It was pretty cool. It was a good concert.
Yeah. Well, I remember coming out after that and it was, everybody was a little rusty. I was a little rusty. I remember being like, oh, how does this go?
Yeah.
What is this thing? Fortunately my daughter and I were doing like a Monday. We were doing like an every Monday night online thing from my basement. So that kept me playing a little bit, at least.
No, that's cool. Yeah.
Pretty fun.
Have you been consistently touring for like, I don't even know for how 30, long?
35 years.
Wow.
Well, minus the pandemic, I was a year off. So right. Yeah, 34 years.
Okay. So you started, my math's going to be tested here, but like mid 90s, basically. And
yeah. I started before that. Probably 1990. I started busking Charleston.
Okay.
And then it was either 90 or 91, somewhere around there, 90 probably. And then I started playing at a little Mexican restaurant. The place that I was busking in front of, there was this little courtyard that was city property in Charleston, but it was, there was a Mexican restaurant right behind it. So I was out in the courtyard playing, and the manager of this place, this guy Greg, came out and said, hey, if I pay you $75 and feed you, will you play in this on our deck for, three nights a week? And I was like, what?
Heck yeah.
And I dropped out of college the next day. I was like, I'm rich.
Nice.
So I was so proud of myself. I think, oh my God, my poor father. I called him and said, guess what I'm doing? You know,
dropping out of college and going to play at a Mexican
Mexican restaurant. I was just so proud. It was my golden ticket.
I love it. So that was the first gig.
That was the first paying gig. I take that back. That was my first solo paying gig. So when I was in high school, we had a high school band and we used to rent out the National Guard Armory and charge kids $2 at the door. And we put on, and we would play, you know, our cover band would play. I was playing gigs, but that was the first time I was ever like by myself playing gigs and getting paid for it.
Nice. What were your early like musical influences in those days?
Oh, well, so I always refer back to the moment in 1977 or 8. My sister had a big record collection, and I was flipping through the albums and I found this album that had this pyramid on it. And I was like, well, this looks cool. You know, I didn't know anything better. And it was a band called Earth, Wind and Fire. And it was an album called All in All. And I put the record on the turntable and I started it and I had headphones on. And the first track on that record is a song called Serpentine Fire. And you can go back and listen to it, but 7-year-old me had his world exploded in that moment. Because I remember distinctly thinking, wow, so people can get together with their instruments and make this happen.
Yeah.
And that is incredible. And I want to be a part of this. Like, whatever it takes to be a part of this. Because, and Earth, Wind & Fire, too, if you go back and listen to their records, it's a really joyful feeling. And the message is positive and kind, and they were internationally famous.
Yeah.
And they were worldwide. I mean, they were huge, and they were spreading this message of positivity and kindness. And I just remember thinking at 7 years old, I want to be a part of this, like whatever it takes.
That's awesome.
And then as time went on, I came across songwriters like David Wilcox and James Taylor. And so what started out as sort of the R&B ethic got fused with poetry and songsmithing. And that's the amalgam that exists now. That's where I am.
I love hearing that. Cause yeah, it kind of helps to then kind of, I mean, read that into your songwriting, into your music a little bit.
And it's definitely into the songwriting. And then the other component was I went through this phase in the 80s when I was a teenager of listening to, obviously, like every teenager, I listened to Van Halen. But I also, some friends of mine got into this Southern California punk music, like DRI and Suicidal Tendencies and the Dead Kennedys and Black Flag. And so there was a whole culture around this music, that this punk music that wasn't for profit. It was just a voice for teenagers, and it was, you know, it's rebellion, the whole thing, but we loved it. And so I think that informed a lot of my skepticism too. So I always nod to those bands because they were sort of defiant in a way that we all identified with as teenagers, as little skater rats or whatever.
Right.
And I appreciated that. And now it's funny because I can go back and listen to Bob Mould's like solo records, like his acoustic records. I cannot listen to Husker Du. I've tried. It's just
okay.
It's hard to listen to some of that stuff. I go, wow, what was I hearing here? But it was really just the attitude of it, you know. And I think, and every teenager, it's like my son has music like that, like he listens to that I just can't even understand what he sees in it. And that's the point, right? It's all a time-honored tradition.
Yeah, yeah. It expresses some kind of something for you in the moment.
Yeah, well, I had a really cool moment with him one time. He was listening to this. He used to love this artist named Juice WRLD. And he was making me listen to it in the car. And he sang this one long note. And it was this plaintive, you know, sort of aching kind of note. And I was like, aha, I know what this is. And I said, hey, buddy, you know what's cool about you is that you, what Juice WRLD is doing for you is what John Kelly did from the samples. And I put on the samples and I played him Sean singing almost the identical note, the identical emotion. Nice. And he went, whoa. And I went, yeah. I said, that's the wolf's howl. That's that signal that certain types of music tells you that there's a big world out there waiting for you.
Yeah.
And it's kind of scary. And that's that signal. And we all have it. We all have this moment where, you know, you're going to have to go out here and live your life, and it's pulling you. And it was a cool moment where we got to sort of share, you know, he was like, well, maybe you aren't so dumb after all. he was like, oh, maybe you do understand where I'm coming from with this. So
That's cool. That's a cool moment.
It transcends, and it's always there. And that's what I love about music, is that, you know, it always seems to function the same way as far as emotionally and spiritually, but it takes whatever form is required for it to be effective in that moment. Like his generation, somehow it's turned into rap and, you know, that sort of sing-songy rap that that tells a story. And, you know, in our generation, it was, you know, Van Halen and whatever, you know, it'll be something different 10 years from now.
Or Edwin McCain for my generation.
Maybe.
Hey, dude, is on a short list of songs for me of like, wait, what year did that come out? Do you remember?
97.
Okay,
it was 97, but it took until 98 for it to really get traction and start digging.
Soundtrack of my high school. Yeah, because I was in high school 98 to 02. So there you go. That's what I'm saying. It's like
it was every prom for.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I'm sure it's every concert. I mean, you have to play it at concerts, right? Like everyone. I mean, it's a requirement.
I happily play it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, you know, it's funny because I get a lot of questions like, do you ever get tired of playing that song? No, never. And really, when I play it, I always try every night when I'm playing it to play it like it's the first time somebody's hearing it. That song has been such an incredible blessing. It's basically, it gave me the keys to planet Earth.
Yeah.
So we've traveled the world on that song, and I've made incredible friendships by traveling around. And that's really the currency in this lifetime, is these relationships that I've had all over the place. And it's all because that one song, the alchemy of that song came together when it did, and off we went.
Mm-hmm.
This episode of Take on the Lake is brought to you by Alpha Lit LOZ. So you know that moment when guests walk into a wedding or a party and there's this perfect glow? You've seen them, those giant letters spelling out love or lake life or USA, whatever fits the vibe. It looks awesome because that party got Alpha Lit. Alpha Lit LOZ brings custom marquee letters to events all across Lake of the Ozarks, from pool parties and birthdays to corporate conventions and wedding weekends. Set up, lit up, torn down, all handled, and it looks great. So whether you're a bride-to-be or planning a fundraiser, or you just want your lake bash to stand out, these lights make memories and photo ops that you'll want to frame. Book your letters at alphalitletters.com/LOZ or follow along on Facebook and Instagram at alphalitLOZ.
Yeah, I mean, I think about this. I'm a musician and love music and love playing music. And I lead worship at our church sometimes and stuff. And so I play some guitar and sing, and I don't write much, but I think a lot about what makes a song work. And I wonder if you think about that. I mean, surely most singer-songwriters have to kind of go, oh man, what is the magic formula? And I don't think anybody can really answer it, but have you ever like kind of thought, okay, what is it about that song in particular? Or, you know, I could not ask for more. That was a big hit too. Like, what is it about those that worked? And then, I mean, every musician will have a whole list of stuff they've written that they poured their heart and soul into as well that just nobody really knows. And you're like, gosh, I wish people would grab onto that one. What is it?
So nobody, you just said it. Nobody really knows. No one's ever cracked the code. I mean, there are people in the music industry that have a better insight than others, and that's why they're the head of A&R.
Sure. Right.
at certain labels. So it was a guy named Greg Latterman who had a compilation CD back in the 90s called Aware. And he would put together all these different like up and coming bands on one CD. And one of his Aware CDs, 10 out of 11 of the bands went on to have major label careers. Like one of his Aware CDs was Us, Sister Hazel, Hootie and the Blowfish, Dave Matthews, you know, all the 90s. You can look it up. But Greg Latterman's probably the only person I've ever seen that had like near clairvoyant understanding of what the zeitgeist is in the moment. Like he really did nail it at the time. But as far as songwriting goes, it's impossible to gather all of the corollaries into one space and then point to the combinations that are driving it, because there's a million different things that are informing the songwriter and the song and the music at the moment.
Sure.
And then, you know, just because one thing is successful because of some fluke, you know, intersection of coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've heard songs that are absolutely jaw-droppingly impactful that no one will ever hear.
Yeah.
And there's no rhyme or reason to it. Like, and a lot of it has to do with timing and the way people are, because, you know, I stand in awe of a band like Oasis, because I say this gently so I don't get a bunch of hate from Oasis fans, because I love their records, but
yeah,
they weren't trained musicians. Like they were just doing what kind of felt great to them. And they share an outlook that's so similar with so many people, it resonated, right? They just hit this perfect vibration. And then also inadvertently, their sort of defiant attitude. Everybody loves the rock star, the defiant rock stars. Uh-huh. And it just became this phenomenon, right? But then in the same breath, you look at a band like the Mahou Vishnu Orchestra, or you look at the Aquarium Rescue Unit, or there are bands that are highly technical and they get held up because of their musicianship and their ability to play in odd time signatures and play like Fish. Like look at Fish. Fish, it's not my cup of tea, but I can genuinely say they are some of the most talented and technically capable musicians that have ever walked the planet. And they don't act like it either. Like, you know, they understand that they're part of something larger, but it really is, it's almost impossible to even approach the alchemy of what it is to have a successful song or to be a successful musician. Like for me, I've just always been trying to sort out what my life is and try to do the only two components that I care about is being honest and emotional in songwriting.
Okay.
Even if the subject matter is not comfortable. And I think from my point of view, I think you try to give a voice to the voiceless in the tradition of folk music. But all that to say, I have no clue what it is that makes it work or not work. But you just, if you can get to a point where you feed yourself by playing music, you're there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if that's your job. And I see a lot of kids on the internet, like struggling with this idea of like working as a musician. And I'm like, listen, man, once you got over the hump of not having to have a second job, like you're there. Now it's just how far up can you push it?
Right.
And I feel bad for some of the people that, you know, the up and coming artists that are literally living the dream, but they don't see it because they're frustrated because they don't have some higher level or some perceived level of success. And that's not there. If you don't love the doing of it, if you don't love the entire process, like, don't get into this.
Yeah.
Because you'll be consistently disappointed. It's never what you hope it will be. It's always about striving, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the heart of most artists anyway.
It feels like a fusion of kind of the ideal and the practical to me, because like what you're talking about with your biggest hit song, that the listens on that song, you know, are exponentially beyond the combined listens on all your other songs, right?
Yeah.
That, like, I could see one person being salty about that and going, yeah, I got a bunch of other stuff people would really like too. Why don't they listen to that? And it's like, but your perspective has been, no, that's opened doors for me to do the thing that I love around the world. Like, and I happily play it at every, I was at a, my dad and I went to see at Ozark Amphitheater here at the lake, the Kentucky Headhunters and the Ozark Mountain Daredevils recently. And I forget which band, it was the Daredevils. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on their biggest hit song. But anyways, they were about to play it. And they said, this one is the one that everybody knows. And they said, and we thank you for it. And our children thank you for it. And our grandchildren thank you for it. And it was like, because obviously you haven't heard very, you know, the average person has only heard one or two or three songs by them. And this is one of them. And that one gave them the ability to still be on the stage. Now they've been touring for like 50 something years to still be on the stage doing it. And that's cool. That's kind of, it's practical from a certain standpoint, right? But it's also, it's like, that's the tool that gets you to keep doing the thing that you love across the world.
I think in most times in life, people can find legitimate things across the board in their life every day. They can have legitimate criticisms of things that are occurring in their life, and they're right.
Sure.
Right. But the opposite is usually true, depending on how you want to see it, how you decide to see it. What I'm getting at, and I have this conversation with my kids too, it's a decision. How you feel about things that are happening in your life is a decision. Mm-hmm. Not things don't happen to you. You decide the way you feel about it.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, I've been out there long enough to know how supremely lucky we are every day to be able to do this for a living, and especially as long as we have, because considering how short the attention spans are these days, like I've heard like recently that there are some singles that have been released that are sub 2 minutes. Like it used to be like when we were releasing singles, you couldn't go over 3.5 minutes. Well, now like people are releasing singles that are literally 1:50. I mean, that's that tells you about the shrinking attention span.
No kidding. Those two things drive me crazy personally, because there have been songs over time where I'm like, man, we were just getting into it and you ended this song. Now, maybe that's kind of artistically the point, right? I don't know, but it'll leave you wanting more. But man, I hate a song that like, you're like, wow, you were just starting to groove and then you just decided to like not bridge again, or I don't know, whatever. And the song's over. And those songs, I don't know, they kind of drive me crazy. So yeah, that's wild to have a hit that's like a minute and something.
It's surprising, you know, but it's also, again, I'm 55. So I said to a friend of mine the other day, we were playing golf and I was like, you know, this world really isn't for us anymore. You know, this is, you know, it's there. Everybody else is it's their world now. We're kind of, that's why a lot of it doesn't make sense. But I accept that it's not for me, like, to listen to a minute 50 song.
Right. You know? Sure.
I'll go listen to Bohemian Rhapsody. Thank you very much.
There you go. Hey, listen, that one's still got staying power. I don't know if I've played that for my 14-year-old son yet, but when I do, I know he'll love it. So, you know.
Make sure you play him the Clash London Calling. That's a great record.
Okay.
And I like to play that record for up-and-coming musicians because it's imperfectly perfect. Like, they didn't edit everything to death, and the tempos move, and, you know, it's not perfectly in tune. There are mistakes all over that record, but it gives it so much soul and attitude. And sometimes we have this, you know, death by perfection because everybody can edit things endlessly, and they edit the humanity right out of it. Right.
So
I always like to remind, you know, play the first three Police records for kids and like, listen, and tempo is all over the place on these records, but they're great. I mean, it's not, you know, everybody's playing to a click track, and so many bands are playing to tracks. There's so many tracks playing. That's a trend that I don't think I'll ever get used to, and certainly won't ever participate in it. And not because I just know that if our band ever tried to play to tracks, it would break. It wouldn't, if there would be a malfunction.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. Like, I know, I see all these bands out there that have the rig and the backup rig and the backup rig to the backup rig. And I'm like, all three of those would break if they were in our band. We have an unusual level of gremlins and we always just play through it.
Yeah.
Pretty funny.
What should, I was going to say Earth, Wind & Fire was one of your early influences. They're going to be warming up the stage for you just a couple weeks before you show up here. I don't know if you knew that. I did not know that. Yeah. They'll be out here July 19th. And, performing, and then your concert opening for Train is on August 1st. Have you been touring with Train this year? Is that this whole kind of season, or is that
this will be that show will be the first one with Train this year? I used to go and sit in with them back in the 90s, and it's interesting because, you know, Pat's always been incredibly complimentary and nice and invited me to play and all that. But I don't really know him. It's not like we text each other a lot or anything. So I've just always been an admirer of his songwriting. And I was really grateful that he invited us to come and play. And it makes a lot of sense. Like, our bands line up perfectly.
Yeah.
Because we're different enough from Train, but it is very song based. And I think it's going to be, it's a perfect lineup, honestly. It's going to be a great tour. And what I love about Pat is he likes to play lots of gigs in a week, and that, so do I. I don't like when we were with Hootie last summer, they only play three nights a week, and I was like, oh man, let's play the gigs.
Get bored.
Let's go out here and play.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to this a lot. I mean, if you can get out to see Earth, Wind & Fire, I would highly recommend it. They're amazing.
I've never seen them. This is not the first time here.
Favor. Yeah. If I'm telling the truth, like, I have friends that know Philip Bailey, and I've been invited to play golf with him, and I've turned it down consistently because I'm such a fan that I would be unbearably annoying to Philip Bailey. I know myself well enough to know that I just got to leave him alone, because I would fanboy out to the point where I would regret it. So
yeah.
I've always stayed away from Philip. Like, Philip played with, he did a golf tournament we were all on, and I went to Darius's bodyguard and I said, listen, buddy, if you see me talking to Philip Bailey, just come and grab me and take me away from him. Just get me away from that poor man.
That's great. It's good to know yourself, know your limitations.
Oh, I'm a total fanboy. I have no self-control.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Have you been to Lake of the Ozarks ever?
I'm not. I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay. What is your schedule? Like, are you carving out a little time to experience the place a little bit when you're here?
Well, I'm the bus driver for our tour.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah. So I won't have a lot of time. When we're on tour and I'm driving, I kind of have to, do all the duties of the bus sure. driver. And so that takes me out of going and doing a bunch of fun stuff. But I also love driving. So it's kind of a trade off, but I'll get to see it. I'll get to see all the on the way in. So yeah. that's the best part about driving a bus is that giant windshield's like a movie screen.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, if you get any extra time, certainly. I was talking with a friend of mine, kind of as the liaison with the bands when they come in. And I asked him, what's people's artist feedback when they come to Ozarks Amphitheater? And he said, what he gets consistently told is that the way that they are treated and the things that are offered or whatever to them is like second to none. So I hope you have a great experience at Ozarks Amp. But if you have a little extra time, I think pretty much anything you want to do, if you even want to go out for a quick few hours boat ride or something, I think they could probably hook you up. So if you have extra time, definitely, I would encourage you to check out the lake because it's one of a kind. It's a really unique place.
I'll have to leave early so we can arrive early.
Yeah. 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 Cool. Well, what should people be thinking about? Or is there a song people should listen to? I mean, besides the obvious ones, or what should you want to prep people for the concert? You have a new album this year, right?
Yeah, we just released an album, the first album in 15 years, and that's thanks to Lee Bryce. Lee produced it. He admittedly was a big fan of mine when he was in high school. And so he, over the years, he was calling me and going, "Hey man, let's make a record." And I'm like, "I don't think anybody cares about hearing a new record from me, cause I'm the same way. I mean, I go hear AC/DC and I want to hear Back in Black. I want to hear I want to hear the early songs. And I was the same way. I would go out in front of my audience and go, "Okay, tonight I'm going to play all new songs." And they would go, "No," But Lee's such a great producer. He's so great in the studio, and making records now is infinitely easier than it used to be. So I went to Nashville and put together this record with him and Jared Neiman, and we put it out, and it's the first album I've ever released on vinyl, which is weird.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Vinyl's back. If you told me that 25 years ago, I'd never believe you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's been fun. But I signed with a management company, with Red Light Management. And so I was sort of, before all this happened, I was kind of in semi-retirement mode. And then this sort of caused me to get back into it. And I had engaged social media, which I never did for years because I was just a different generation.
Sure.
And then, well, as a result of all these things and then doing the Mass Singer, and our Spotify numbers are way back up, and the 90s nostalgia has kicked in.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I'm getting a little last breath of air.
Nice.
A little push with the wind, and it's nice. It's really, really, it feels nice to be able to go out here and get to make a lap and play all these songs for people. And
love it.
Especially playing in the big amphitheaters with like a big name like Train, because it's a different level of touring when you're out with bands that are that famous.
Sure.
Because, all the venues are cool, and just like you said, catering and parking, and everybody's cool and happy to see you.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I will encourage folks to go, obviously, check out Edwin McCain on Spotify. Check out the new album. Refresh. It's been a minute since you listened to I'll Be and I Could Not Ask for More. So listen to those two a couple times for everybody, and then check out the new
album. We had a lot of independent records after we left Atlantic. We did four with Atlantic, and then there were six after that. So there's a lot of music. If you're into that, if you want to go discover a bunch of music, there's a lot of different music
Yes,
that we put out.
So. We'll send folks that direction and encourage people. I think, as far as I know, there's still tickets to the Train and Edwin McCain concert on August the 1st at Ozarks Amphitheater. People can get those at ozarksamphitheater.com. I know people can find out all the places to find you and your music online. And I just want to say thanks for joining me today, Edwin. It's been a great conversation.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. And I hope the concert here goes great and the rest of the summer goes great. Appreciate you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been Take on the Lake. If you would like, subscribe, share this episode and the podcast with your friends, that will help us grow the show. Stay anchored, stay curious, and we'll see you soon.